Welcome everyone to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 48, section 3, which is old single column, page 545. All right, so remember we're in this paper that entitled The Marantia Life, and you know, we sort of one at a time get little vignettes on some of the main players of the Marantia life. You know, if you recall, you know, looking back, I mean, they started us with the setting, with Marantia materials. Then we went into the Marantia power supervisors who are behind bringing those materials into existence and, you know, working with all the beings to see that the Marantia domain is an ongoing phenomenon. Or you might think of it in terms of, you know, you have a foundational physical domain of the local universe, and you're adding Marantia phenomenon upon that foundation. And remember, the word Marantia, you know, reminds you of that fact, that artificial material, Marantia substance, is predicated on material, you know, literal matter. Marantia means that which is akin to matter. So it's always the case that the Marantia domain has that fundamental quality to it, that you're in this mode where you're augmenting where you started, you know, when we're thinking of us as ascenders, starting in, you know, as with a material identity. You know, so when we're reading about this next group here, the Marantia companions, you know, their job is to nurture you up from your material identity towards a spirit identity in a way that seamlessly meets you where you are, starting at, you know, just immediately above the material, at least as close as you can get to the material, and yet be Marantia, not material. So, you know, and you saw with the Marantia power supervisors how there was these different flavors of those beings. You know, being they're designed for different roles. You have a similar thing here. You know, we see this over and over again. When they give us a being, you've got seven different subcategories. So we have that same pattern again. Now, I mean, if you just glance at the section, you know, in those seven subcategories, you see there isn't a lot of substance with each of those. It reminds you again that there's not a lot that they can say directly about what's going on in the Marantia life. It's beyond our imagination. So, again, in that sense of that which is akin to matter, you have descriptions that are akin to material experiences that they're attempting to leverage off to give you some idea, at least, of you know, what these different seven categories are about. And we'll try to mine it for whatever we can, see if we can pull as much truth out of it as we can. All right, let's jump in here.
Section 3, Marantia Companions. These hosts of the mansion and Marantia worlds are the offspring of a local universe mother spirit. They are created from age to age in groups of 100,000, and in Nebadon there are at present over 70 billion of these unique beings.
Okay, so just little tidbit. Remember how we, you know, we've touched briefly upon the Marantia companions before. Right. You know, back when we were talking about the first mansion world, I mean, that's on page 534 in the single column. You know, it's those last two paragraphs of section 3 in that paper about the mansion worlds. You know, and one of the things that we saw there, and they said these companions are the offspring of the local universe Mother Spirit, and there are several million of them on the Marantia worlds of Satania. Remember when we read that and we were going, wow, okay, that's not a huge number. And so we were looking for a little bit more clarification about that. Well, see here, they're picking it up right here, again saying offspring of the local universe Mother Spirit. So they're, in that sense, they're obviously somewhat similar to the local universe angels, and that they just have that one parent of the creative Mother Spirit. So we'll be looking for shades of that similarity to come out when they describe them. They're created in groups of 100,000. That actually seems like a pretty significant number to do at one time. Remember when we were back on the Marantia Power Supervisors, they were just made 1,000 at a time, right? And it says, and in Nebadon, there are at present over 70 billion of these unique beings. And so again, we're going, that's a big number in some sense, but relative to, the number of inhabited worlds and local systems and, whatnot in Nebadon, it still strikes you as kind of a smallish number.
How many systems in Nebadon?
You've got 10,000, systems, right? All right, so, they're going to mention that here in just a second. You can see we need to figure out something about this. Why is there so few of these? When their name would make you think that there would have to be lots and lots of them, if they're going to be fundamentally companions for, apparently all of the ascending mortals, because we're basically talking about the ascension scheme. But we haven't even determined that yet. I mean, are they just companions for ascending mortals? I mean, if it goes beyond that, then the numbers are even smaller, right? We've got this kind of question mark in there. It's just interesting that they start us up again by invoking that question mark. So let's see where they take us next here.
Marantia companions are trained for service by the Melchizedeks on a special planet near Salvington. They do not pass through the central Melchizedek schools. In service, they range from the lowest mansion worlds of the systems to the highest study spheres of Salvington, but they are seldom encountered on the inhabited worlds. They serve under the general supervision of the Sons of God, and under the immediate direction of the Melchizedeks.
Okay, just the thing in the middle there about what we were just saying. I mean, they just made the problem a little bit worse. We're thinking 10,000 local systems, but it's not just at the local system level. They're functioning at the constellation level and the headquarters level. Okay, so they seem to be spread pretty thin. They do get some training. So, they aren't like the Marantia Power Supervisors that, they just hit the ground, fully ready to go. Not one nanosecond of hesitation. They can just immediately begin to function in a complete way. But they do. These beings do need a little bit of training. But you notice they mentioned they don't go through the whole rigmarole of training like we're going to go through, or some other beings might go through. They just have some specialized training. Remember how, you have the worlds around Salvington are broken up into those groups, for different types of, general types of beings. Obviously these are going to be related to the Marantia type beings and the training there, right? But we don't have any details. But just saying a special planet near Salvington, so one of those Marantia related training spheres, which you will pass through, when you're up at at the local universe headquarters level. You know, you'll get to see where it is that they're trained and have some relationship to that. But then, you know, they do help us with the numbers that they're seldom encountered on the inhabited worlds. Okay, so at least we don't have to think of spreading them out over all the inhabited worlds. And the Melchizedeks are basically taking point on their direction. So, you know, that tells you that they definitely have some relationship to the basic educational regime sort of ministry in the local universe, even if they aren't directly, you know, educators per se. The fact that the Melchizedeks are immediately supervising them, you know, gives you that little bit of information. So they're not just going to be a companion to you. You know, you're going to be leveraging off of that relationship in your growth. And so the Melchizedeks are overseeing that. All right, what else do we have here?
The Maruncha Companions maintain 10,000 headquarters in a local universe, one on each of the first mansion worlds of the local systems. They are almost wholly a self-governing order and are, in general, an intelligent and loyal group of beings. But every now and then, in connection with certain unfortunate celestial upheavals, they have been known to go astray. Thousands of these useful creatures were lost during the times of the Lucifer Rebellion in Satania. Your local system now has its full quota of these beings, the loss of the Lucifer Rebellion having only recently been made up.
Yeah, and that's not surprising. I mean, it's only, if they're only made 100,000 at a time, you know, it might take a while for us to get some fraction of that and, you know, slowly rebuild up those that we lost. You got a couple interesting, you know, seemingly conflicting points there. On the one hand, they say they're almost wholly a self-governing order, you know, which is rather striking, because, you know, they must not be very high beings in many ways. For no other reason, you know, they can go astray. You know, that's telling you that they aren't very high in the whole hierarchy of beings if they're susceptible to rebellion or, you know, other issues like that. So, you know, we're kind of looking for some more information there. How do we understand that? How could they be, the angels are not self-governing, the seraphim say. So why are these self-governing and yet, you know, open to issues? So maybe they'll give us a clue. We want to kind of be looking for something along those lines. And here you see, you know, they mentioned the 10,000. You divide 70 billion by 10,000, you get 7 million. They said millions back there about, you know, but... Right, I mean, so the numbers seem to jive, but still, you know, we know we've got just, you know, trillions and trillions of ascenders, right? how exactly are you supposed to think about this, this companionship? All right, let's see. What was that?
I jokingly said they move quickly.
Oh, yeah, maybe, yeah. It was like, okay, all right, you've got 2 seconds of companionship. Okay.
Make the most of it,
yeah.
And you're in a group of
10,000. All right. But the one thing that is kind of interesting is, so if we have, you know, millions here, you know, millions are here at the time of the rebellion, you know, just thousands, you know, were lost. So that does speak to some integrity, right? Because they obviously have bosses. You know, maybe it helps that their main bosses are the Melchizedeks, okay? The Melchizedeks weren't joining the rebellion. Maybe the fact that they aren't so immediately following the nose ring of the Lindonadek son, You know, maybe that helped to keep them from going astray. But maybe they have some internal integrity too. We're kind of wondering about that. You know, the whole bit about self-governing seems to speak to some internal integrity. Okay? So, you know, you just notice what I'm doing, like I've been doing every time. You just, you know, see, dwell on each of these, and, you know, and reflect on a little bit. See what, you know, what kind of gears turn as you think about what they're telling you here. All right.
There are two distinct types of Marantia companions. One type is aggressive, the other retiring. But otherwise, they are equal in status. They are not sex creatures, but they manifest a touchingly beautiful affection for one another. And while they are hardly companionate in the material human sense, they are very close of kin to the human races in the order of creature existence. The midway creatures of the worlds are your nearest of kin. Then comes the Marantia cherubim, and after them, the Marantia companions.
Okay, a number of little tidbits there. Okay, so starts out, sure enough. So they're like the angels. They're not male-female per se. They're positive-negative, aggressive-retiring. So they have that angelic-like differential between them. You know, stressing they're not sex creatures. And then, you know, they throw a zinger in the middle, and while they are hardly companionate in the material human sense, it's like, well, they're Marantia companions. What do you mean they're hardly companionate? So that's, you know, that seems to be hinting at something. Okay, see, about, they know that we're struggling on these numbers. Okay, we're looking for beings that are companionate in the human sense, material sense, so that we need gazillions of them, right? No, that's not what we're talking about. See, so there they gave us a little bit of a clue. It's not in such simple one-on-one, very individuality-like companionship. It's some higher order of companionship that's going on here that I'm sure has a lot of intimacy to it, but it's not so simplistic, arithmetic like we're thinking in some way. So the numbers aren't an issue. Right?
Maybe because they're, you know, more spirited, they can in some way touch many at the same time. The only example on our level, you know, like, you know, sometimes a TV star would keep you company in the afternoons, for mm-hmm. example. You know, but they wouldn't, of course, interact with you. Mm-hmm. That way, and it would be more of a maybe a real interaction kind of thing. Maybe they could truly interact with more than one at once. Mm-hmm. But yeah, maybe something along that line.
Maybe they kind of flavor the environment, you know, with companionship in some way. You know, and it's. So it's a little bit more of a non-linear sort of a holistic sort of relationship, so that you don't need so many of them. We undoubtedly we can't really resolve this, you know, clearly because we don't know exactly what we're talking about with, you know, our lives there. But you can see some clues here.
Yeah. Marantia cherubim.
I was just going to get to that. Okay, so then that last little bit. About giving us a direct statement about where they fit into the lower hierarchy of beings that have been revealed. It's back in, let's see, what paper is that? Paper 38, the last couple, the three sections of paper 38 is where they talked about cherubim and sanabim, first of all, and then they had a final section on the midway creatures, you may remember, sort of in the context of how they're similar to angels, and so they had a section on the midway creatures there. First of all, in the Marantia cherubim, I mean, if you look in section 8 there of, what did I say, paper 38? Yeah, paper 38. Just a reminder that there's those three different types of cherubim you know, the highest one, which are, you know, in line to really kind of become seraphim, be changed. And there's the mid-phase cherubim, and then the Merantia cherubim, those fourth creatures. Remember how they had the, you know, that basic pattern, you know, like we have with genetics, of dominant recessive. All right, so you had those so-called Merantia cherubim that are, you know, much closer to our level of being as a, how do they word, the quasi-material characteristics. Okay, you know, and so it's kind of quote-unquote Merantia cherubim. I mean, just like these are Merantia companions, we don't know exactly how literally to take those adjectives. You know, I mean, you probably don't want to think of them being having Merantia bodies like you'll have, you know, but in some way they're very similar, obviously, at least to our Merantia bodies, for them to call them that. And then in that last section of paper 38, you may recall from way back then that they gave us some of the hierarchy. I guess it's, I don't know, let's see, what's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. The ninth paragraph of section 9 there in that paper. It said, the gap between the material and spiritual worlds is perfectly bridged by the serial association of mortal man, secondary midwayer, primary midwayer, Merantia cherubim, mid-phase cherubim, and seraphim. All right, so they gave you those beings in the hierarchy. And you see what they just did here. You need to get more of the picture. You need to bring in this statement they just made. Insert the Merantia companions in that hierarchy in between the Merantia cherubim and the mid-phase cherubim. Okay, so that's where they fit in. So, yeah, I mean, they are definitely down there a ways. They're not even as high as mid-phase cherubim, right? Which are distinctly below seraphim. Okay, so they're definitely down in the lower levels. You know, so we have this question of, well, this is kind of a curious thing that they would have that kind of almost wholly self-governing, culture going on amongst them, being down there just above Merantia cherubim. All right, let's see. Anything else in there? Any other things people are curious about in that paragraph? Let's see. Maybe just before we go forward and then into the next paragraph, just note what they said there. You know, so back here to paper 48. When they said that they're regressive and retiring, but otherwise are equal in status. So they have a very distinct commonality to them, apparently. You know, so it isn't like some beings were these different subcategories. There's a lot of difference in the actual nature of the being that you'd sort of notice right off the bat. I mean, these initially are going to, you know, all going to be six and one, half a dozen another. You know, they're going to need name tags for you to figure out what's going on. If they're all very equal in, you know, in their sort of immediate recognizable nature. And see, they speak to this in the next paragraph here.
These companions are touchingly affectionate and charmingly social beings. They possess distinct personalities, and when you meet them on the mansion worlds after learning to recognize them as a class, you will soon discern their individuality. Mortals all resemble one another. At the same time, each of you possess a distinct and recognizable personality.
Okay, so two things there. First, what I was just saying. Notice that they tell you, after learning to recognize them as a class. So, you know, that's something they haven't really spoken to. So apparently when we get there and we're just trying to figure out how to be conscious as a Merantia being, an awful lot of beings are all going to look alike to us. We won't be able to distinguish one from the other. I mean, are you a seraphim or are you a Merantia companion? They'll all look the same. we won't have, you know, precise enough sensory discrimination to separate them. But, you know, you'll start to sort out, oh, you guys are Marantia Companions, and you're Seraphim, and you're Cherubim, and this sort of thing. But then, like they were hinting up there, when you finally know that these are the Marantia Companions, there's no sort of immediate temperament of self that distinguishes them. Right? You're going to need to actually discern the functioning of their personality to distinguish them one from another. You know, and that's, of course, between the lines when you're at the end there. Mortals all resemble one another. Okay? Now, remember how potent a statement that is. Right? As we look around the room, it doesn't look like we really resemble one another. Right? And we're used to calling that difference personality. Right? But for someone who knows that the differences that we see around this room have no meaning, and are actually looking at your real difference, your personality, which none of us are really discerning at all, right? Right? From that perspective, mortals all resemble one another. Right? So don't expect to be treated differently by celestial beings because you have a different temperament than someone else. You know, like your temperament, you're more spiritual than someone else. Right? Remember that basic, your bias towards your unity consciousness or your individuality consciousness that you just have because of how your mind is attuned to your genetics, you know, giving you an initial temperament by nature. I mean, that's not consequential to beings who are looking to minister to the real you. You know, they're looking for signs that the basic causality of your mindal self within its genetic boundary conditions is doing something besides being a basic causality of mind energy within boundary conditions, right? They're looking for you to actually exercise your personality, you know, and alter that causal sequence in the mind energy relative to your temperament, relative to your boundary conditions, right? They're looking for signs of creativity, genuine creativity. You know, creativity, again, is not, this person by nature can play piano better than that person. Right? That's just a temperament. Hope you don't mind me picking on you. Right? But this is, this is the initial thing we've got to struggle with. We have certain natural abilities by nature. You know, we may have certain skills by nurture, right? But that's just a basic, training of teachable mind. To go beyond that to something that humans have never contemplated before. Remember the fact that personality has never been recognized by any human. No matter how much they've used the word personality, they've been talking about self and temperament
on this
world, right? We've never understood the difference between self and personality. You know, we think that exercising the free will is about mind over matter. You know, that you have a right to a certain arrangement of molecules of your body or of the things outside of your body. You know, and that's your free will right. No, free will doesn't have anything to do with the molecules of matter, your body or otherwise. Free will has to do with your mind, right? A great person is not the one who rearranges molecules, right? Who conquers a city or overthrows a nation, right? A great person is the one who is mastering that mind energy, whose mind energy isn't just following the causal laws of mind energy, but you've taken a hold of it. There's nothing innately divine about your mind energy following the laws of mind energy within your boundary conditions. Right? Your mind has to be mastered. You have to take a hold of it. And you have to dictate what the sequence of forms are in your mind. That's free will. That's creativity. creatively, the next form in your mind is not what mind energy laws would dictate. Right? It's something that can't be predicted. It's free will. Right? The laws of mind are known to a million decimal places. Right? They can calculate every thought you have, just as following the laws of mind energy to exact, you know, details. Right? But can you surprise them and actually exercise free will? You know, and see, and that's what you're looking for, you know, to distinguish one Marantia companion from the other is, you know, you can tell that's a different Marantia companion than that one because the way they're interrupting the normal causality of their mindal self is different than the way this one's interrupting the normal causality of their mindal self. And they just told you that they have very, very similar boundary conditions, you know, and very similar minds, right? So just the laws of mind energy are not, they don't have really different temperaments. Their mindal cells are playing out almost identically, right? So you have to look beyond their temperament, right?
So how come the personality is unrecognizable?
Right.
Or is it?
Well, I mean, how is it that you know that they tell you the person is recognizable? What you're going to discover there that unconsciously you had a resonance with that distinction. But the key is right now to appreciate that you aren't really conscious of this yet. Mostly, you know, the fact that I have a personal recognition of you is not what I'm immediately conscious of. I have to allow my personality recognition of you to be basically in my super consciousness right now, to be an unconscious recognition. In the next life, what's now almost all wholly unconscious will be more conscious. That's the beauty of having a Marantia mind. I'll get my consciousness up to that level where this personality recognition really is, rather than most of my consciousness now is below that. Right?
So can I go on?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yep.
So, two things. Mm-hmm. One is Jesus got to that point here, mm-hmm. and the other is that when you on a planet, when you reach certain stages of light and life, because you skip all this stuff, mm-hmm. you must be able to get to that point to a certain degree.
Right.
We just aren't there right
now. Right. I'm speaking very much just, you know, us right now. You know, none of us are first circlers, you know, and you know, and none of us are on a planet deeply settled in light and life or any of these things, right? So we.
But you mentioned a second ago, you know, when you start looking at controlling your mind, you envision how you do this, and you start thinking about how can you experience this, or can you, in our state.
And see, even when you start to recognize that you've done some mastering of yourself. That it isn't just reacting to an environmental stimulus like your temperament would. And when you've begun to take hold of the reins, initially that's not going to be profoundly different from another person who's taken hold of the reins. Because initially, you know, what you're doing is getting yourself to reflect the cosmos, and there's one cosmos. So initially, you know, we're using our personality to get our mindal self, our higher mindal self, to reflect the universal harmony of the cosmos, which is common, in fact, for everyone. So it starts as a kindred mind. You know, basically what that does is gets you up to the level where these Marantia companions are, where they all have basically the same mindal self. They have a mindal self that's very synchronized with the cosmos naturally. They must, or they wouldn't be almost wholly self-governing, right? So they're kindred minds by grace. You know, we're not even remotely kindred minds by grace. We're trying to just be kindred spirits. We're trying to even potentialize this, right? So that the first step, see, is getting to sort of a foundation that is cosmic in character, that now a distinct, that absolutely unique pattern of your personality can play upon that foundation. So it's that's what I was saying. I mean, when they tell you that you're going to recognize people from this life and the next life because of their personality, it's going to be there. You will have the first inklings consciously of what you'll recognize in retrospect. Oh, I did know that, but I wasn't conscious of it. I was resonating with that slight distinction of that person's personality rather than just their temperament. But, you know, it's going to be very hard for us to take that tiny signal out of the gigantic signal that is the temperament right now, you know, which has these huge differentials, you know, those huge differentials that haven't been taken up and harmonized to the kindred mind level, so that now that, you know, gross dissimilarity is not in front of your eyes, and you have a subtle stage upon which the subtle manifestations of personality can play and be recognized. That's what we're striving for. So, you know, like they said, you have to trust most of this fancy stuff to God's design of you. Don't expect to be getting a lot of conscious validation of these things that they're telling us here in this life. We're just not able to consciously validate a lot of this stuff yet. You know, trust everything beyond the dead level of consciousness, right? To the powers that be, to the ministries working in you and with you. Because you have to do that, because you have to recognize you can't see this stuff. You can't feel this stuff directly yet. So you got to just trust that it's there even though you don't feel it. Trust everything beyond the dead level of consciousness. And, so anyway, long story short, you can see in trying to understand what they're telling you about the nature of these beings, we actually understand a little bit better about ourselves. How step one, before we try to manifest our personality, we need to get up to the level like they are. See, and they're not very far above us, remember? See, so, you know, our initial cosmic consciousness is going to be a lot like theirs that they have by grace. You know, we'll achieve through effort. We'll get up to their level of synchronization with the universal harmony, and finally our personalities will begin to be able to manifest. Remember, we just read about that in the previous paper, that your personality doesn't start to really shine forth in a way that's very immediately conscious to everyone until you are a finished Marantia individual leaving Gerasim. Right? That's what we're striving for, is trying to get that, to get the mindful self clarified enough, cosmic enough, so that personality can begin to shine through it. Right now, you know, it's a light under a bushel, you know, as the biblical passage goes. Right? You as a person are hidden mostly right now, and can't manifest yet. So you need to very patiently work on supplying the favorable conditions to be grown into a being through whom personality can shine forth, finally. All right. Let's see. So they are touchingly affectionate, charmingly social. I guess we've went through everything there. But just stressing at the very end, they possess a distinct and recognizable personality. Now, it will be recognizable definitively at one point, even if it isn't consciously now. Okay, yeah.
Winston has a question about pattern of the personality.
Yeah.
How did Jesus in the flesh first become aware of personality? Was he also, like us, unable to recognize personality as he was a maturing mortal of the world?
Yes, I mean, definitely. I mean, again, if that wasn't the case, if Jesus wasn't just like us, Jesus' life would be useless to us. Right? The point is, he's true man. You know, and again, along that line, I stress it all the time. You know, the distinct usefulness of Jesus' life for you as an example is up until baptism. Now, his public ministry after the baptism is of limited usefulness to you, right? Because you're never going to be true God and true man. Right? You know, it's nothing you can even ever attempt to emulate. I mean, it's a separate issue. You know, you can think about what he was doing for the long-term maturation of his local universe during his public ministry, but in terms of usefulness immediately for you, you know, it's up until baptism. And, you know, you may remember, they don't really tell you anything about when he was a second and first circler.
They take St. Master's as mine, is that they keep
saying? I mean, because even that's starting to get a minimal usefulness to us, because as a second and first circler, you know, he's starting to get some resonance with his Michael nature coming in. But when he's just a third circler, you know, going around the Mediterranean. So basically from birth, you know, up to when he's going around the Mediterranean as a third circler, that's what you should be striving for. Okay, that's my immediate goal, to see if I can become a human like he was manifesting, going from a seventh to a third circler. No God issues, you know, muddying the waters here. Just maturing creature, true human, true man, developing a faith that you can develop. Right? You know, the personality, when the creator personality starts manifesting, I mean, you know, that's a totally different type of personality than you have. I mean, it's, so that's just not really relevant. You know, you need a creature personality example to strive for. You know? And that's the great thing about what they did in part four, is finally give us, you know, some of those details that are immediately useful. Everyone has been trying to do something with the apostles' descriptions of his public ministry, and it's no wonder we've gotten all wrapped around the axle about this stuff. It's problematic to be, you know, to thinking, what would Jesus do during his public ministry? That's just really problematic, right? You know, what would a creator being do? It's like, what usefulness is that to me, right? What would a being, you know, doing an extended seventh bestowal mission, you know, yeah, it's just so not relevant, right? Okay, it's very inspiring. It is indeed, right? You know, and it speaks to the love of, you know, of our Creator Son for us, all those things, you know, but just carefully don't, you know, don't let yourself get into the what would Jesus do mode of that stuff. You got to be careful with that. You know, what would Michael do? Okay. Right? But, you know, when you say what would Jesus do, you're thinking, you know, what should I do to be like Jesus? You know, that's, of course, the subtext of that. Or the subtext of that. I guess that's the way to describe it. So why don't you read that little heading in item number one there.
Something of an idea of the nature of the work of these Maruncha companions may be derived from the following classification of their activities in a local system. 1. Pilgrim guardians are not assigned to specific duties in their association with the Maruncha progressors. These companions are responsible for the whole of the Maruncha career and are therefore the coordinators of the work of all other Maruncha and transition ministers.
Okay, so before we deal with, something of an idea, you see them reminding you directly that there's just some vague hints that they're going to give us here. So the first group, Pilgrim Guardians, you read that and you think, oh, like Destiny Guardians. You know, it's going to be a really close, intimate association with me. And then you start reading, and it's like, they are not assigned to specific duties in their association with the Maruncha progressors. Here we see two things. One, our problem with numbers just increased because they're involved in a lot of things besides kind of just interacting with us as ascenders. So much so that you need a group of beings that are just sort of the umbrella beings that are overseeing the whole complexity of what's going on with the Maruncha companions. They're responsible for the whole of the Maruncha career and are therefore the coordinators of the work of all other Maruncha and transition ministers. Not just the Maruncha companions. However, Yeah. On the positive side, interesting that all of the other Marantia and transition ministers are being coordinated by some of these Marantia companions. Okay. So, you know, coordinators, you know, they're seeing to the systematic nature of all of your associations with these Marantia and transition ministers. You know, the big picture individuals, making sure that it functions as a system, not just a bunch of random associations, so that it has more innate relationship to the whole, the systemic nature of the universal harmony. Coordinator, see, that's obviously, you know, relationship to the mother, using that word coordinate, right? So, pilgrim guardians, you know, but they're called pilgrim guardians. So, you know, like I'm saying, just keep going around and around on this, you know. So this is kind of saying what we were suspecting, that it's much more of an environment sort of a thing, this companionship. See, they're seeing to it that there's that spirit of companionship in what's going on with you as an ascending pilgrim. They're not just this simple, you know, I need a wingman, you know, at the bar sort of a thing, right? It's not that kind of a companion that we're talking about here. Right? The only problem is we don't know how to somehow bridge this gap that makes them feel distant. You know, in some way they won't be distant, even though it's obvious that it isn't just this very simple sort of additive one-on-one sort of a thing. But the fact that they are, again, almost wholly self-governing, I bet you they're very effective, you know, in their efforts. A little bit of their influence probably goes a long way. All right, so we seem to be starting to resolve this numbers issue a little bit. Okay. even though at the same time that it seems to get a little bit better, it also gets a little bit worse in that they're giving them all kinds of other duties here. But, all right, what else do they say about them here? You got something too?
Yeah, I was just thinking about the Marantia progression or the environment. We'll be challenged to become more and more individuated.
Mm-hmm.
And when you become more and more individuated, you have to socialize.
Yeah.
Can't just become an isolated, an island individual.
Right.
So there's a great tension there that we have to always be resolving and not just individuate off into the corner somewhere.
Right. Yeah. Very good point. I mean, that brings in the distinction between self and personality again. There's a lot of commonality of mortal mindal selves. Right. I mean, you know, we'll struggle to have relationships.
Why are you looking at me?
No, But we struggle with this issue of social interactions. But it's not totally impossible. Think about how, you know, we've managed to, none of us have lifted a battle axe, you know, for several minutes here, all sitting in the same room together. You know, we're able to reasonably socialize in this room. No one's feeling too tense about someone else's presence. You know, okay, there's some immediacy because of our, if nothing else, common genetics or common, you know, cultural, you know, upbringing, you know, that we can interact some without too much friction. But again, think about what Gene was just saying. I mean, what happens when you start to definitively manifest your personality, which is absolutely unique It doesn't overlap naturally with any other personality. There's nothing natural about two persons socializing. They're island universes by definition. Right? Now Gene was just saying, I mean, you have to work very definitively to somehow come into relationship with something that's transcendent of an ever more absolute difference between you. Right? Think of the grace that you don't manifest a lot of your personality right now. You know, if right now you've struggled with loneliness at times or something. Think about how lonely you would be, you know, if a lot of your personality just naturally manifested and you didn't automatically overlap with anyone. You know, it was just oil and water everywhere you turned.
Right? That's probably why you have to learn how to live with 10 different people.
Right. We know that, you know, what a huge task it is. You know, once we're finally definitively manifesting our personality and we leave Gerasim, we go to the constellation level, it's a lot of work, you know, that we have to go through all those worlds, all that complication, to get to the point where you can begin to transcend an ever more stark difference. You know, you are creative, like, how? Remember what they say about going to Havona, you know? Wait till you are very manifesting your personality, you know, a being that gets into Havona, you know, and the stark differences that you have to face there. You know, the challenges are extreme, you know, and all of you are on a journey to try to, you know, get a relationship to absoluteness so that you can be residents of the Isle of Paradise. I mean, and it's just, so this knob is just being cranked and cranked and cranked. It's like, you know, relate to this. Okay, I did that. Oh, yeah? Well, relate to that. You know, I mean, they just keep amping up the differential, and you have to try to somehow bridge that by going ever higher and higher to transcend it, you know, and find common ground. So, yeah. So, anyway, you've got this definitely in play. And it's there enough, even at this lowly level, starting on the mansion worlds, that they've got beings that are fostering this. Like I said, remember how they said you pick up, you know, where you left off basically in the mansion worlds, except, you know, you got a Marantia mindal self now. So there's some more immediacy of spirit nature. Hence, there's some more immediacy naturally of spirit pattern on that spirit nature. You know, your personality just naturally manifests more. So you wake up with an awareness of personality you didn't have and an awareness of difference to others you never had. You know, you'll recognize that other person by their personality, and you'll recognize that they're much different than you ever thought. Yeah? You know?
It's like the same.
It's a double-edged sword.
Simon says, Master, are all men children of God? Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's saying that guy can't be one.
You know? Right. Yeah. Right. You know, and on high you're going, no, I mean, that can't be personality. I mean, that's just so dissonant with other things. God would never make a spirit pattern like that. How are we supposed to harmonize that thing? Right? You know, it takes a lot of work for everyone. You know, that the high beings trust this. You know, when they saw Lucifer, the way he was manifesting in his early life, you know, or Caligastia, you know, they, oh, now that one's going to be a tricky one to find a way to bring that into the cosmic system, to find a harmonization avenue. That's a very outlier expression. But they trust, you know, as it turns out, it didn't work. It, you know, a harmony wasn't found, but that's just because the individual stopped trying to be part of the cosmic system and thought that they were an island universe and they could stand that way. Yep.
So personality is in play here, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Would wisdom also be in play with it?
The extent to which we have a little bit of personality in play here, we, by grace, have a little bit of wisdom. But, you know, it's just that basic wisdom that we call common sense. Right? It's the most minimum of wisdom.
But it could be more if you're...
Right, if we took delight in cultivating, it could be more, obviously, yes. But, you know, the only reason that there is civilization at all is because we are persons by grace. Right? So that there's some measure of civilizability to us by grace. Right? The emergency right now is we are actively, willfully negating our human nature that we have by grace and making ourselves uncivilizable. And so civilization is in jeopardy. Right? You know, the battle cry of self-assertion is starting to play out, you know. You know, where you want to be this, you know, island fact that has its rights, you know, and there's, you know, there's no context that you have to exist in. There's no temperance that you have to manifest, you know, et cetera.
Responsibilities.
Right, no responsibility that you have to assume. Yep, something.
You know, Winston is a little confused about the definition of common ground and would like to know how it is that through that truth can be understood and harmony can be accomplished through common ground. If you can refresh his memory on what common ground
Yeah, okay, so if I used that somewhere just recently, I suppose it was in the context of about common ground, the idea of common ground, and I suspect what I was referring to was the universal harmony, you know, that's a common ground for us all. But remember, the only way you can stand on that common ground is when you flip where you're currently standing. Currently, you're standing on the bottom of the hourglass analogy of your mind. And there's no common ground to the bottom, you know, basically. It's all the differences of temperament and whatnot are grounded there on the bottom of the hourglass. You know? But the universal harmony is a common ground on the top of all of our hourglass analogies of our mind, right? And if we get ourselves up there and flip ourselves around, quote unquote, and stand upon the cosmos first, right? Then you begin to have this kindred mind phenomenon because you're standing on common ground, common mindal ground. I mean, the universal harmony is that mindal ubiquity of the creative mother spirit. Right, it's a common mindal ground. You know, it makes you kindred minds. You know, that's, and there's nothing automatic about that in any profound way, other than just that thin little bit of, if people haven't willingly overruled this, they can automatically agree that something just makes sense. You know, it's like we all go, well, it's just common sense, right? You know, we look at each other and we all nod our heads yes and agree, you know, to all think about it that way. Yeah, you know, but it's getting harder and harder, right, to even find that. Right? All right. What do we have next here?
Number two, pilgrim receivers and free associators. These are the social companions of the new arrivals on the mansion worlds. One of them will certainly be on hand to welcome you when you awaken on the initial mansion world from the first transit sleep of time, when you experience the resurrection from the death of the flesh into the Marantia life. And from the time you are thus formally welcomed on awakening to that day when you leave the local universe as a first stage spirit, these Marantia companions are ever with you.
Okay. So you've got the whole bit about, you know, from bottom to top again that they're reminding us there, that they serve all the way up to Salvington. And we see, okay, here they're talking about the ones that we're thinking are more immediately... They're more immediately interacting with us. But you notice even now they have two different flavors of this. They don't just have pilgrim receivers, they also have these quote-unquote free associators. So you apparently have some of these that are more directly engaging individual senders that do it in a more assigned fashion, and others that do it just more in a as circumstances happen sort of mode. Free associators. Oh, well, coincidentally, here's an opportunity, and they foster it, as opposed to them being assigned to a specific task at a specific time. Right? So that complicates the numbers thing even more. If you got to have some that can be free associators.
Well, plus, if one's going to be there, what welcome each one of us?
Yeah.
Resurrection all total 700,000 at a time.
Right.
100,000 each, and there's billions coming off of this planet alone. I mean, it's like, there's a numbers thing. They can't be welcoming you for too long.
Right. Right. So,
hi, how are you? You're over here.
Right. So we definitely see, that...
But you're so freaked out. Right? You're like, what?
Right. It's obvious.
Read this book. You're going to go, woo.
It's obvious that this can't be an intense, long-term, intimate, one-on-one thing. It just doesn't. The numbers don't add up.
And yet, the way, the loving way that the whole thing's planned out from. Paradise to hear.
Not as much as
you can bet that they just don't leave you there.
No.
There's got to be some kind of a little bit of intimacy or sometime where you at least get a feeling of everything's okay.
Right. So in that issue, that you're never going to be left just standing there, on an empty plane, wondering what you're supposed to do next. Remember what they said in the previous one. How those pilgrim guardians were coordinators of the work of all other Marantia and transition ministers. Remember, there's many more beings that are unrevealed than are revealed. Don't ever forget this, right? So the numbers don't have to add up with the Marantia companions. There are so many different types of beings that they don't even reveal in here.
Plus, is it a guardian
angel? Yeah, you got the guardian angels, all this sort of stuff, right? Right. They're just a very small part of a very complex ministry. But they obviously have a very special role in this, that they are fundamentally the element in this ministry that immediately, directly is fostering the companionship of all the ministry. Right? That intimacy element in all of this ministry that we want, that we think of when we say companionship. Okay. All right. So now back here to the pilgrim receivers and free associators. Let's see. What else we have there? We see that one of them will certainly be on hand to welcome you, and obviously a whole bunch of others. Now, obviously, if you were being resurrected as a third circler, on your own and not in a group, right, that would be a little bit of a different experience. But again, you're a third circler. You can engage something more intimate. It's just like with the seraphim, and initially they're a pair of seraphim for a large number of humans, right, because there's no need in those seven circlers for anything more than that,
right?
Till they're, so you can see that that's, that is going to go hand in hand. Now, as you can as you can receive more ministry, you'll get more ministry. Initially, there's a limit to how much you can be ministered to. You're not a very living, dynamic fact to begin with. Right? It's like the little baby before they learn how to crawl. And they're delightfully not very animate yet, and you can just set them on a blanket on their belly and go off and do something and come back and they're still in the exact same spot when you left them. It's very handy, right? Right? We start out like that, where they don't have to be right there intimately with us because they can just sort of set us on our belly on a warm blanket and come back in a while and we're still right where they left us, right? We start out as little children of God. So... So that's definitely in play. Again, that helps with the numbers thing. Now just notice what they said at the end before we read the next paragraph. These Marantia companions are ever with you. Okay, and then what do they say?
Companions are not assigned permanently to individuals. An ascending mortal on one of the mansions or higher worlds might have a different companion on each of several successive occasions, and again might go for long periods without one. It would all depend on the requirements and also on the supply of companions available.
Oh, wow, they waited until here to finally drop it. Okay. Okay, this helps with the numbers question. Okay. You might go for long periods of time without one. All right. See, so again, they're just not that, you know, that they're not, as they said, companionate in the material human sense. Yeah. Right? That's not the picture you should be getting here. And not only that might you go for long periods without one, but they pointed out, and all, you know, it depends also on the supply of companions available. Right? So right there, they're directly speaking to the fact that, you know, we've been talking about, it's like, wow, the supply is not that great here. Yeah, it's a distinct issue. You know, you may want a Marantia companion, but there isn't one available because there's just not that many in the local universe. Right? It's like, well, how am I not given what I need? Well, yeah, you're always given what you need. Oh, they must not be, you know, an indispensable element in the picture here, right? They're the cherry on the sundae, right? They're not the ice cream. So you can easily overplay them by what they're called, and it's taken us all this time to reflect on that and understand how we should interpret the name Marantia Companion. Not what we initially thought. They're not like, you know, the dog that never leaves your side. But wait a minute, they said these Marantia Companions are ever with you. And then they said you might go for long periods of time without one. Ooh, did we just find an error in the book?
No.
All right. Right. Again, right. Only if you're a fact finder first instead of a truth seeker first. You know, is there an issue there? Right. Their influence is ever with you. They don't have to be literally, you know, glued to your hip for them to be with you in truth. Right? Like we're saying, most likely they flavor the environment of everything. And their influence goes a long way. You don't have to have them located, you know, in every room, you know, whatever, you know. That's a great example, you know, just very close order. They give you a contrast, like ever with you, and then long periods of time without one. You know, can you resonate with the truth enough?
Peace with that.
To properly interpret what they're saying there. You know, and I've tried to point this out. They often speak that way. You can't think simplistically about what they're saying. They're not revealing facts. They're revealing truth. Right? What's the truth of their statement, these Marantia companions are ever with you? Can you think about the truth flowing through that sentence rather than just in a two-dimensional, superficial, factual way? What's the truth of that statement? That's the whole point. The facts are secondary to the truth, right? You know, and that's what we've kind of gotten. You know, initially when you're given a number, like the number of them, it's, you know, you have a tendency to just, okay, that's a fact, it's an end in itself. No, they don't do that. They gave you that because there's some truth that they're trying to encourage you to recognize via that statement of fact. I mean, who cares, you know, if there's 70 billion or 80 billion, you know, factually, what difference does that make, right? But, you know, can you get into the truth of why they gave you that fact? What truth is flowing through that fact? That's the whole challenge of the revelation, to find the truth. Okay, so, all right, but we basically solved the mystery of the numbers. A lot of times they're not available because there's just not that many of them. Okay. All right.
Number three, hosts to celestial visitors. These gracious creatures are dedicated to the entertainment of the superhuman groups of student visitors and other celestials who may chance to sojourn on the transition worlds. You will have ample opportunity to visit within any realm you have experientially attained. Student visitors are allowed on all inhabited planets, even those in isolation.
Okay. Now this really kind of takes us to an aside, you know, which we've got to play with a little bit. Okay, but the first thing, just the immediate thing, you know, even more so that there may not be one available. I mean, you know, they've got to be host to all the celestial visitors on these worlds too. Okay, so it's not all about you, right? So, you know, they're spread thin, right? They definitely may not be available. You know, what if there's a big convention, you know, and there's all kinds of celestial visitors in town, right?
I forgot my hat. I'll be drinking alone again.
Yep, no wingman. All right. So they also are dedicated to the entertainment of the superhuman groups of student visitors and other celestials. Okay, this whole bit with student visitors, you know, that's the fun thing to go off on a little tangent here with.
Why do they need to be entertained?
I have some needs. Why do they
need to
be entertained?
Yeah. And again, exactly what's entertainment, right? All those questions, right?
Visitors in this room are being greatly entertained.
Yeah. Really? Yeah. Freed up some companions.
Okay, so, you know, the little sidelight here is, you know, this issue they don't talk about a lot, about what you can do in terms of sort of horizontal adventures, you know, separate from your beeline vertical adventure from here to paradise, right? Okay, you will have ample opportunity to visit within any realm you have experientially attained. You know, so like when you're at the constellation level, you know, the whole constellation is open to you. That's a lot of worlds you could go visit, you know, et cetera, all the way on up. You know, and student visitors are allowed on all inhabited planets, even those in isolation. Right? So, you know, if you wanted to take an excursion over to another, you know, like the neighboring planet, maybe you want to go check on, you know, see how much, you know, nuclear destruction there's been, you know, on the neighboring planet, you know, since this book was written. How is the island continent faring these days, right? You could take a journey over there, you know, and see if the benighted hordes on the other continents are really causing them a lot of problems these days. Or what about the rise of religion, you know, on the island continent? Has that totally ripped their social fabric apart now, where you got zealous religionists tearing... Right, but then there's that, yeah. I was just going to say, you know, we all know that there's something they don't tell you there directly. You know, you can't come back here during this dispensation. Yep, yeah. So, now, you know, who knows? Maybe the, you know, magisterial sun is not too far down the road. Maybe the next dispensation is not that far down the road. So maybe you could come back here, you know, a few hundred years in the future. Okay, but... Right, exactly. Yeah, and of course, if you're only going to be waking on a dispensational resurrection, by definition, it'll be the next dispensation before you can go on a trip. Right. So, you see, that fact is one of the reasons why they don't always remind you of that issue, right? Because it's kind of just there by default normally. It's always the next dispensation when you wake up. Okay, so. But the, you know, the one thing that's a little bit kind of curious there is thinking about immediately here. I mean, when I'm on the first mansion world, is everything open to me? You know, this whole, how soon can I become a student visitor?
As soon as you've achieved a certain
Yeah, I mean, it's a little hard, you know, all they don't specify, to visit within any realm you have experientially attained. It's like, well, I mean, I've experienced life on a nativity sphere. When I'm on the first mansion world, I mean, can I go to, on a visit already, to another world? Could I go to the neighboring planet when I'm just on the first mansion world? I don't know. Like I said, there's some, I don't quite know to make out of, there must be some, some asterisk going on here, some qualifications, stuff. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it's the case that you've got to actually get to Gerizim before you can go on one of these trips. I don't know.
I'd be embarrassed to go on
Gerizim. Wait, here we got two conversations going here, guys. Hold on. What are you guys saying?
He was wondering about, what is the determination of if you go on a trip, is it, one consideration here is money, but it's service motive there. So maybe you have to, put up a plan, propose a plan for how you want to serve and have it assessed somehow or measured or whatever, when you're ready to do something.
Well, think of some of the complications that could be in play here. What if you're on the first mansion world and you are definitely tending towards iniquity? will they let you go traveling like to a non-rebellion sphere and potentially influence what's going on there?
You're supervised, though.
Right, you're supervised and stuff. I mean,
But after this rebellion,
I mean, they're letting you influence all the ascenders on the mansion worlds.
Ooh, that's true. That's a good point.
I mean, so you see, there's a lot of things to think about here. Exactly, how much trust is in play? How much is like, well, you can go once you pass this test, or something like this. I don't know. But in that regard, I wanted to bring this in. When we start thinking about rebellion and influences and stuff like this, okay, remember what they told you about Maharaja Companions. Thousands of these useful creatures were lost during the times of the Lucifer Rebellion in Satania. Okay, so think about, fewer on the mansion worlds 200,000 years ago. And some of those Maharaja Companions are these pilgrim guardians, right? This group number one, who coordinate the work of all other Maharaja and transition ministers. And that pilgrim guardian has joined the rebellion. So he's overseeing the whole environment that you're immersed in, and he's directing it to be coordinated with what Lucifer is saying is the way things are going to go, right? That's a flip side of what's going on here. We've been just thinking about the positive side of their influence, but boy, when you've got beings that have this much influence on your environment, and you're just a lowly ascender, and they join the rebellion. Remember how we read about how Satan would have assistant system sovereign, would have been going to teach you those special classes on the mansion worlds about administration. And you're going, whoa, think of the ascenders, in those classes back then. The boss man has come to teach your class today, right? Yep.
But that already happened, and it's not going to happen again.
No, I know, right. But see, is that all there is your fear? or do you care about those people 200,000 years ago? Right? I mean, even if it doesn't impact you, is it relevant to your consideration? Does it concern you that God would let that happen?
But, well, and I think that, isn't there some kind of directives that we need to have every opportunity to go back?
Right, not to mention, right, what the Creative Mother Spirit immediately put forward about, you know, fostering greatest opportunity for sin expression. Right. So, I mean, I don't like to dwell on this all the time, but you know, I occasionally bring this up in the midst of us having a big positive discussion about all the warm, fuzzy beings that are going to be helping us. You know, remember that with every measure of liberty that's given beings like to minister to you positively, you know, there's an equal measure of potential for them to lead you astray when you're dealing with lowly beings. You've got to have integrity, courageous and independent cosmic thinking. You can't be dependent upon Marantia companions. You can't even be dependent upon Lanon Index. Yeah. Right? I mean, fundamentally, you can't even be completely dependent upon a Melchizedek. You might be stuck in the middle of one of his blind spots of wisdom. You know, where he falls into a little bit of error. Okay, it's not evil, but it's still error, and you know, and if you're just nodding your head, you know, in agreement to everything the Melchizedek is telling you, right, you'll fall into the same error as he's in. You know, just, you know, you want to keep this in mind. This is, you know, this is not what humans have ever wanted to believe about the afterlife, that it's challenging like this, that it's potentially catastrophic like this. Right? You know, so, you know, it just should remind you why they say that up in paper 16, section 6. Right? You know, there is a reason why your personality is absolutely distinct from everyone. It doesn't overlap. It means fundamentally there's no way that you can be forced down a path that someone else is taking. You don't overlap them, you know. You won't get caught in their draft and get sucked in, you know, unless you choose not to stand integrously on your own feet.
That's the key.
As an absolutely distinct person. integrous in and of yourself. I mean, there will be beings, you know, Amadon had Van, right? But he didn't have Nod. Right, and he had to discriminate between Van and Nod. Right, and he could do it, and that's why he had Van. I mean, if he couldn't discriminate between Van and Nod, he wouldn't have had Van. Right, so it always boils down to you. You've got to be able to stand on your own two feet, and so just, you know, reflecting back on the challenges that were so poignant to those people ascending 200,000 years ago. You know, and how, even if it's only thousands and not millions, there's still thousands of Marantia companions that you did not want to be following their companionship back then. You did not want to be subjecting yourself to this pernicious influence that they were bleeding into the environment around you and corrupting all of the beings in the social circle around you. Right? You needed to stand apart from that in the same way that the other 100 of the prince's staff, you know, had to stand independent of this toxic environment that they suddenly found themselves in amongst the primary 100. Right? So now, even though we won't face a rebellion when we're there, we will face renegade individuals, right? Just like you do here. And you got to be able to discriminate. Just because that person on the first mansion world has this beautiful Marantia body doesn't mean you should just nod your head up and down with everything they say. Right? You need to you need to be able to critically examine whether or not you should follow their thoughts.
But as far as the ascenders go, your bodies will reflect your inner self and the degree of your development.
Eventually, right? I mean, okay,
but you're not going to be reflected as this glorious entity while you're still entertaining all sorts of.
But, you know, remember, the tricky thing, you know, what that person has in their head is not merely fallacy, so that immediately gets manifested externally and you can see their fallacy. The problem is when they have a sophistry in their mind, not merely a fallacy, and they manifest that outward. The manifestation outward has spiritual candy coating it, right? It will look positive on the outside. Right? That's the tricky thing about sophistry. Just because now you can see it, you don't have to sort of, you know, intuit it in, you know, within their mind. It's more directly manifest. That doesn't immediately help you. I mean, anything, that'll make it more problematic. That's what was so problematic about Lucifer. He's got these incredibly problematic sophistries in his head, but they don't show in his manifestation. He's just as seductively beautiful spiritually as he ever was. The spiritual candy is unaltered, right?
Nobody wants to go see him anymore.
Right, anymore, but not back then, right?
We don't have to worry about that.
Right. But, you know, but just, we have to worry about humans that do the same thing, right? Don't fall for, you know, everything isn't what it appears, right?
Getting into politics here?
No. but you know, we could go down that path, but you have to you have to develop insight so that you don't judge the book by its cover. There'll be a lot of beings who will have pretty covers on the mansion worlds, but if you have the insight to see inside, you'll know, you know, that the cover is, or the interior is different than the cover, right? Right, you'll see through their spiritual candy. You know, you'll see through that sophistry. So, again, it all kind of just comes back to remind you, you know, independent. You know, you've got to overcome any fear of this. You can't be afraid to face this. And you have to stand independent in relationship to the cosmos. Once you have a courageous, independently established connection to the cosmos, then you have a relationship to others. Right? But it starts with you assuming that responsibility to be the favorable conditions that grows into synchrony with the cosmos.
And you notice that even today, you know, spiritual people, the people that to you reflect being spiritual, that they are more that way than others. You can see they're sort of like comfortable in their own skin, so to speak.
All right, so let's see. I think we got everything there, didn't we? We did all the student visitor stuff. Okay, so we're ready for the next group. Yep.
Number four, coordinators and lays and directors. These companions are dedicated to the facilitation of Marantia intercourse and to the prevention of confusion. They are the instructors of social conduct and Marantia progress, sponsoring classes and other group activities among the ascending mortals. They maintain extensive areas wherein they assemble their pupils and from time to time make requisition on the celestial artisans and the reversion directors for the embellishment of their programs. As you progress, you will come in intimate contact with these companions, and you will grow exceedingly fond of both groups. It is a matter of chance as to whether you will be associated with an aggressive or a retiring type of companion.
Okay, so here you know, if it wasn't clear already, when they say blank and blank in one of these titles, it's actually two subcategories, right? They aren't coordinators and liaison directors. Some of them are coordinators and some of them are liaison directors. Okay, so these two different groups. This is the passage that I often refer to, where they give you this little tidbit. Okay, they notice what they're doing here with the use of language. They don't hit you with it, but they hint all over the place. Starts out with using the word liaison. You're going, oh, that has a connotation. You know, one of those liaisons that the two humans can have. And they turn right around, and they didn't have to use it, but they did. They said intercourse. Just to add on to that. Okay, they are the instructors of social conduct. Okay, you've got to remember of how it, just how much more immediately intimate we can be in the next life. And this opens up a potentially negative possibility of interaction. Right? You don't want to rape someone else, quote unquote. Right? There's an intimate liaison, you know, intercourse that's possible here. Notice that as you progress, you'll come in intimate contact with these companions, they said. Right? And they use it, so that, again, that word intimate. So it boils down to remembering that you, this Marantia body that you have, you want to kind of think of as being a little bit more liquid-like than solid-like, like we've been talking about. And they refer to that when they say, so facilitation of Marantia intercourse and to the prevention of confusion. Okay, the word confusion, literally, poured together. Right? You have an ability to, for two Marantia beings to kind of pour themselves together.
Yeah, especially with all the senses you have.
Right? To kind of melt into each other. Right? You need to know the proper social protocols, all this, or you'll be raping that person.
Or vice versa.
Right? You are imposing yourself on them in a way that's not appropriate. Right? So there's an equivalent of this inappropriateness that we call rape, right, here. And it's much more intimate than the interaction physically that we can have here. You know, this pouring together that they're speaking of there with the, you know, that literalness, the prevention of confusion, not just, well, I'm confused. Oops, I'm poured together with this person and they didn't want that. That isn't what they were expecting that interaction to be about.
But it's not rape with lust.
Right, obviously. We take it. Just recognize that what they're pointing out is these things that we do on a lowly material level here, they have an expression on high. Right? You have to learn proper conduct. Okay. They have all kinds of classes on this, right? it's in reflecting on this paragraph. It's why I often speak about this. You know, this is a potential that they're speaking to very directly by hardly hinting here at the words that they choose. And you go, you might be, you know, if you haven't figured this out yet, when you read that last sentence, it is a matter of chance as to whether you'll be associated with an aggressive or a retiring type of companion. And then, okay, why did they mention that there? Right? You see why, right? I mean, you know, the positive, negative, the female like male like, you know, quote unquote differential. They mention that in this context because you have that sort of a thing. Going on, and you know, you have to learn the proper, just like we have to learn the proper way to relate male to female in public, you know, settings. There's certain things that are not appropriate. They're pointing out that's all kind of in play. There's this differential of quote unquote male and female, not, you know, the positive, negative, aggressive, retiring. See, so that's why they mention that there. See, because that's fundamentally what we're talking about here is these differentials, and we have to learn how that all works, what you can do and what you can't do with this potential intimacy that you have. On the positive side, I mean, you think you can be intimate physically with the opposite sex in this life, You know, think about when you can actually pour yourself together. Right? Think about the sublime liaison potentials, you know, with these higher bodies. So, you know, but there's going to be an appropriateness to that. This is, I have to remember. And so that also speaks to this issue of, you know, when you favor your unity consciousness and you kind of go down that path of thinking that we should all be drops of water and blending into one ocean. See, notice that no, you're definitively individuating, you know, and it can be very, very improper to be poured together, you know, into one ocean. Okay? So there's a lot to reflect on there about the falseness of a lot of human thinking along this lines of wanting to everyone to just pour themselves together into one unity.
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a great degree of supervision in right. that they're not going to be pouring someone into somebody else.
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, there's all the supervision, but you know, you can think about, well, I wonder what was happening during the rebellion, right? Right. I mean, you know, they spoke, you know, they mentioned that a little bit about, you know, that there was some attempts to kind of interact, you know, energetically in inappropriate ways, you know, so, okay. Anyway, so even though we don't understand the physics of all this, you can see the spirit of it, that there's a definite etiquette issue to things up there. All right, let's see. All right, go to the next one here.
Number 5, interpreters and translators. During the early Mansonia career, you will have frequent recourse to the interpreters and the translators. They know and speak all the tongues of a local universe. They are the linguists of the realms. You will not acquire new languages automatically. You will learn a language over there, much as you do down here, and these brilliant beings will be your language teachers. The first study on the mansion worlds will be the tongue of Satania, and then the language of Nebadon. And while you are mastering these new tongues, the Maranchi companions will be your efficient interpreters and patient translators. You will never encounter a visitor on any of these worlds, but that some one of the Maranchic companions will be able to officiate as an interpreter.
Now, this one reminds us of the numbers issue again. Right, but nonetheless, we've kind of beat that one to death, but you can see there's this numbers issue. So you may have to wait until there's one available if you've got some interaction where you need a translator, say. Okay, but to the immediate things here. Okay, so there's two types, interpreters and translators. Like, well, aren't those synonyms? Okay, they want you to think about, I mean, translator, okay, if you actually have a different language, like, you know, you don't know the local universe tongue yet, you know, and this being that you need to interact with is speaking to you in the local universe tongue. Well, you need a translator, okay? But, you know, if you both speak the same language, but they know it at a much more sophisticated level than you. You're just, you know, learning it. You're going to need an interpreter, you know, that, you know, can interface between, you know, this kind of vertical differential within the language, you know, that you have. So that's the point of an interpreter. And that brings up an interesting speculation I've been working on with this. This whole issue of, notice they say they know and speak all the tongues of a local universe. They are the linguists of the realms. And you're going, well, good grief, how many languages must there be on all of the nativity spheres? I mean, is that what they mean by that? That seems extreme. My first guess is what they mean by that is they know all of the local universe or the local system tongues. Right, all 10,000 of them. Okay. So they know those 10,000 languages plus the local universe tongue and the tongue of Eversa. You know, the super universe language. Okay, hold on. I'm getting there. Okay. So this, what about this whole question about, well, what about when I wake up and I'm going to speak English? This is the hypothesis I've got working in my mind. Maybe you're not. The thing that I'm wondering is it the case, you know, remember, you don't wake up with this mind. You wake up with that other mindful self that's seated on your soul right now.
But you have memory.
I have memory. Right? Just follow along with me. Just follow along with me. It's a hypothesis. It's not a given. But my hypothesis is, you suppose that right now, that other mindful self that's seated on your soul, you suppose it knows rudimentary the tongue of Satania right now. When the thought adjuster builds your soul, it's building something that's not, you know, directly to the side of you. It's above you, right? It's an upstepped version of you. I mean, what's the truth about the languages within a local system on all the inhabited worlds? They must in some way, in truth, all be downstepped expressions of the one language of Satania. Right? Because in many ways, they're all those mortals on all those worlds are just downstepped expressions of the material sons and daughters in that local system. I'm wondering if right now that other mindful self thinks in the tongue of Satania in a very rudimentary way, right? And, you know, and the extent to which there's any, which is almost none, interaction between these two mindful selves in this life, you know, remember the only reason that soul can have any interaction with you is it goes through the adjuster, you know, in between. The adjuster would be serving as an interface, say, to take it from the tongue of Satania to English and from English to the tongue of Satania. When we get on high, I'm sure we'll understand this. It's like, you know, if you're a seraphim and you get assigned to a planet and you got to learn the languages, you know, on that planet you're assigned to, that's, you know, basically you have to just learn, all those languages are just different dialects of the tongue of Satania, I'll bet. That's my suspicion. Don't know for this for certain, but, you know, I'm thinking this might be the case. When you wake up on the first mansion world and you're interacting, if this is the case, you know, and you're interacting with a relative, right, that's died before you, say, you'll actually be interacting in the tongue of Satania. If they got there, you know, well before you, they would know that language fairly well by then, and you know, you'd just be beginning, you know, to do baby talk in it, like your embryonic soul does baby talk in it, you know, in the tongue of Satania. And you'd need one of these interpreters, you know, to really, you know, interface. But you wouldn't need I'm thinking you don't need a translator. I think you just need an interpreter. I don't know that for sure, but that's just a thought to kind of keep in mind. And if you run across anything else in the book that kind of speaks to that, I'd love to hear your, you know, what you found. So I'm trying to refute that idea right now. See if that works. That would be a way to have it kind of be very efficient if you think about it. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't you think there would be some sort of, kind of not evidence of that, but you know, some semblance of, or I don't know, pieces of that in folklore and that kind of life after death experiences and all those kind of things. That,
again, not very likely. See, because you know, there's some potential of intimacy, you know, between the adjuster and you, but you know, you don't begin to have any significant interaction with that other mindful self until you're a first circler. You know, and again, it's only via the adjuster. There just would be no way that the tongue of Satania would be manifesting in any direct way. I mean, it doesn't have independent voice. You know, it doesn't have a mouth, right? That other mind, old self. You know, if it's going to speak in any way, it's got to come down through the adjuster into your mind and, you know, and then, you know, out your mouth, right? I mean, it doesn't have its own eyes. It sees through your eyes. You know, the extent to which it sees this material domain, senses it. So, yes, it, like I said, I've thought about it a bit. It's like, I don't know, I'm having a hard time. I think it's a kind of an interesting possibility that that might be what's going on. You know, it would just fit into the whole hierarchical picture so well that, you know, things down here are downstepped expressions of what's up there. And more individuated, remember, that's always the case. You got something that's kind of all together, and as you take it down, it branches into a more individuated expression. You know?
Two questions.
Yep.
One is, refresh my memory what the harp of God is.
Okay, yeah, we talked about that.
Does something about translated?
No, that's, if you go back, that's at the end of the previous paper, in section 10 there. Perfected space communication is to be had on all these worlds, and your anywhere reception of such communications is made possible by carrying the harp of God. Okay, the harp of God is about, it's like the radio that tunes into these broadcasts, these space communications. See? Right.
The second thing was,
so it's not the universal translator, you know, in Star Trek. Yeah.
If in fact, you know, pretty much everybody is being resurrected in a dispensation, then there's really not going to be anybody that you know who's going to be there before you. You're pretty much all going to get there around the same time.
Right, we talked about that. I mean, the only time that's in play is if you're talking about a bunch of third circlers.
True.
You know, resurrected.
So, but my thinking would be, you know, a little bit more, you know, as you say, common sense, which is, you know, when you first get there, the only way you know how to communicate today and now is in the language that you know. Mm-hmm. So you're probably going to have to be, you know, able to start out in that particular way of communication, because right now that's the only way you know. We haven't gotten to a point of where, you know, we're able to take, you know, like say the color red. We know that we look at it, we see the color red, and in 20 different languages it's spoken in a different word, but it's still the same thought, so to speak, and we're not quite evolved to that.
But again, remember, the mindful self that's talking to me right now is not resurrected.
Yeah, but not necessarily. I mean, my memory is, and some of them may be my way of communicating.
Yeah, but not the memories in your brain. Huh? Only those spiritualized memories in your adjuster.
Yeah, but some of them may be. You know, I mean, I tell my adjuster that.
So that I and the adjuster says, matter, words on page, what that?
He doesn't speak.
Okay? No. Right? I mean,
how do you, so let's put it this way, you know, you're looking at the fact that you progress from one place to another. If you don't retain, you know, the things that are important to progress, then what's the point?
You know? Right, you don't retain things that aren't important to your progression.
It's hard for us to judge what's important.
Right. But you know, without any specific judging, you know that a lot of the stuff that you're doing right here has no meaning to you as an individual.
Okay, so if I want to look up my grandma, right, you know, how am I ever going to know who my grandma is? If, you know, I can't recognize her personality because I never.
No. We talked about you will. When you're put in the same room with your grandmother, you'll feel a resonance there. You know, she'll look totally different. And you know, we talked about this before, just like with Jesus. You know, the same thing happened with Jesus. When they saw Jesus, you know, during, you know, post-resurrection, none of them recognized him by, you know, him looking the same as he did before, right? They didn't, they got this resonance with him. It's like, wait a minute, you look different, you sound different, but you're Jesus, aren't you? They felt this resonance. See, they became conscious of something that they were unconscious of before. Right? That's what'll happen here. You'll be resurrecting you, and you'll wait a minute. You look, you know, you're totally different. I've never, you know, I have no photograph in my memory that looks like that. but I feel a resonance. You may have to be told, yeah, that's because that's your grandmother. Oh, yes, right, that's right. Remember, they had to put that together too. You know, it wasn't a me. It's like, well, wait a minute. The tomb is empty. This is Jesus. You know, and then they go, yes, oh yeah, it feels like Jesus now that you tell me.
When you go to the whatchamacallit, they say, right? You look up people.
Right?
What do you look them up under?
Yeah. It's just like looking up your memories that you won't have when you wake up there. Remember they tell you, you'll say, this is your memory. You go, okay, if you say so. Yeah, but then you interact with it. Oh, wait a minute. That is my memory. I feel it. I don't directly remember it, but I feel that is my memory, and now I've put it in my memory bank again, and I have it again.
Deja vu is for like spirit or sun.
Deja vu. For spirit fusers, it's all like that. For you, most of it's like that, and then there's a little bit the adjuster has. Okay? Because again, most of these things are not spiritizable, so the adjuster doesn't have the memory. Okay. All right, so let's get some more here. Right, again, you got to trust. Trust everything beyond the dead level of consciousness. Yeah. See, you don't want to trust. See, I'm going to pick on you. Okay, I will pick on you. Right? None of us want to do this. None of us. We want to be conscious of everything. We don't want to trust. You know that the real me is not. I'm not conscious of. It's like, no. I want the conscious me resurrected.
Right now.
It's like, no. No, you don't. Right? You don't either. Yeah. When you wake up, you won't be sad that the consciousness you have right now is not resurrected. You'll be so delighted. It's like, ah, the real me. This is much better than I imagined. Right? That other self that's listening to me right now, that you're not conscious of, that's the you that's resurrected. That Marantia self, you know, is in direct relationship with those memories in the adjuster. You're not. Right, I have no direct relationship to the memories that my adjuster has, because my adjutant mind doesn't interface with those memories. Only that Marantia mindal self that's seated on my soul interfaces with those memories in that adjuster. Just like my Marantia self can see spirit substance right now, can sense its existence in the external world. I can't. Right, but it can sense spirit substance in the external world. That's the self that's resurrected. That self that right now can sense spirit substance in the external world. That's you on the first mansion world. Right? Not the you that is completely oblivious to the fact that there's spirit substance in this room. Right? And you know, if I have the courage, I don't want that to be resurrected. Right? I've got to be willing to let go of that scaffolding self that is so blind, so ignorant, right?
So as humankind evolves over long periods of time, that changes that
journey. Yeah, right. Yeah. And obviously as a first circler, you know, you're beginning to be aware of some of those things, right? You know, in a rudimentary fashion. You know, and if first circlers on an advanced world will be aware of those things in a very profound fashion, right? They're so aware of that Marantia, you know, there's such a close interaction between the Marantia self and the adjutant self of a first circler on an advanced world, you know, that they're basically functioning like they're a Marantia self and are learning local universe tongue and super universe tongue and stuff like that. Right? It's just way beyond us right now. Okay, let's keep going here. I'm not going to finish up.
Number 6, excursion and reversion supervisors. These companions will accompany you on the longer trips to the headquarters sphere and to the surrounding worlds of transition culture. They plan, conduct, and supervise all such individual and group tours about the system worlds of training and culture.
Okay, notice they're just speaking to the excursion ones there. The reversion ones they'll pick up in the next section when they talk about the reversion directors. Okay, so you got those two different flavors. Okay.
Number 7, area and building custodians. Even the material and Marantia structures increase in perfection and grandeur as you advance in the Mansonia career. As individuals and as groups, you are permitted to make certain changes in the abodes assigned as headquarters for your sojourn on the different mansion worlds. Many of the activities of these spheres take place in the open enclosures of the variously designated circles, squares, and triangles. The majority of the mansion world structures are roofless, being enclosures of magnificent construction and exquisite embellishment. The climatic and other physical conditions prevailing on the architectural worlds make roofs wholly unnecessary.
Okay. Couple things. Note circles, squares, and triangles. You're going, well, what about rectangles? Mm-hmm. Anyone remember why doesn't it say rectangles there? You remember what the rectangles were?
Nothing
the natives.
Right.
Remember, the rectangles are for the natives of the world. So, you know, that's not the context we're talking about here. And here, again, it's like, well, okay, we've got the numbers problem. We've got to have Marantia companions that are involved as area and building custodians. But on the other side, yeah, we've figured out that they have a lot to do with the environment, that they're involved in making the environment companionable. And that includes the things, not just the beings. Remember how we talked about this a lot with the celestial artisans. They actually are involved in making sure that modifications to areas or buildings that are Marantia constructs foster companionship. So, yeah, I mean, they don't have to be intimately present. Once that's set up, it's an ongoing fostering of companionship, the way that beings interact with the things, getting more of the power personality synthesis happening, even at these lowly levels. Okay, so you can see when you reflect on all of it, it's obvious that they are not, as they said, companionate in the material human sense. They're much more a holistic environmental influence. They have some immediate one-on-one intimacy, but the bigger, you know, they're more involved with the bigger picture than the micromanaging details, right, than the word companion would initially indicate. You know, so they're seeing to it that you and your environment pour together to a degree, that there's this harmony, this resonance between you and the building that you reside in, and that fosters a greater interaction with the friend that comes over that evening. And I mean, that's what they're doing. They see to that aspect of beings and their environment. Let's see, was there anything else there?
There's certain things you're permitted. So what's implied there mm-hmm. are other things yeah. that you're not permitted.
Right, exactly. Right. Can I change that? No. Okay. Right. Yeah, again, we're visitors just passing through.
You can't paint the walls.
All the walls are white. It's just like a rental unit. No. Again, see, avoid that tension. It's like, where you're just like, wait a minute, I think that's limiting my self-assertion. Right. Remember how we're living on a rebellion world and we have this tension all the time. It's like, you're not going to tell me how to decorate my room. I'm sure if you follow their suggestions, you'll be very delighted. Yes.
Just noticing that kind of the requirements for survival are changing subtly.
Yeah.
When we think of survival on our planet, shelter is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
On this area, there's no roofs needed. So Your whole survival budget is about something different.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. You don't have to deal with those ridiculous issues of you get your room arranged just perfectly, so it has this great resonance, and then a tornado blasts it down, right? Right. You don't have to worry about those sorts of things. Yeah.
But we are worried about other kinds of survival.
Yeah. Yes. There is that whole issue. You know, in the early worlds, you haven't fused yet. Yes. Okay.
These custodians of the transition phases of ascendant life are supreme in the management of Marantia affairs. They were created for this work, and pending the factualization of the Supreme Being, always will they remain Marantia companions. Never do they perform other duties.
Ah, okay. Notice the word there. They are supreme in the management of Marantia affairs. Okay, so, yeah, so even, so this, they're designed specifically for this task. They do it perfectly. That little bit of training they got, remember, they just got a little bit of training. That's just, you know, with the details of how to interact with ascenders at different levels and all those sorts of details. But the basics of what they do perfectly, innately. No wonder they're basically self-governing, right? In terms of their nature, they're rock solid. They're supreme in the management of Marantia affairs. It's just the other issues, aside from the immediacy of them functioning in a certain way, that they can go off, you know, on a tangent. You know, if they go into rebellion.
It sounds like they wouldn't go off on their own. They would go off. They could be led to astray.
Yeah.
The similarity.
Right. I mean, in general, that's the case for all, you know, the seraphim really don't have any innate tendency to go astray, but they can be led astray. Right? You know, just as there are no iniquitous six-year-olds, you know, I mean, there's an inherent integrity in beings, especially ones that are being created directly by the Creator Son and Creator Mother Spirit. Right, but they can be led astray. Yeah, but this is rather striking. I mean, the fact that they use the word supreme, you know, that's not just a, you know, it's like, well, we didn't use that word for a while. Let's say supreme. It's like, no, that one really should catch your attention. Oh my goodness, supreme.
It doesn't mean that at some juncture they would, their function would change over.
Yeah, see
once,
that.
Once light and life has occurred.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. See, never do they perform other duties. You know, so they, in the unforeseen future of the universe of universes, they won't have to mature their functioning to synchronize with that. No, they've already got it. You know, they already can function at a supreme level.
Supreme level, so
yeah. So, yeah. So in that regard, the universe is trying to catch up with them. So, you know, who's low and who's high here? Okay.
As systems and universes are settled in light and life, the mansion worlds increasingly cease to function as transition spheres of Marantia training. More and more, the Finaliters institute their new training regime, which appears to be designed to translate the cosmic consciousness from the present level of the grand universe to that of the future outer universes. The Marantia companions are destined to function increasingly in association with the Finaliters and in numerous other realms not at present revealed on Urantia.
See, so you see that. I mean, you know, the Finaliters are trying to, you know, encourage you in relationship to that ceiling of supremacy. Well, these agents of supremacy can play an intimate role. You can leverage off of them. So the Finaliters will use them, you know, as points that you can leverage off to try and get you potentialized to be able to flip around to the absentite side of supremacy eventually. Right? So, yeah. You know, this last part is really kind of catches you off guard. It's like, wow, these beings have a really high nature, that the fact that they could go into rebellion doesn't, you know, doesn't suggest. Right? Yeah.
You can forecast that these beings are probably going to contribute much to your enjoyment of the mansion worlds, whether your sojourn is to be long or short, and you will continue to enjoy them all the way up to Salvington, They are not technically essential to any part of your survival experience. You could reach Salvington without them, but you would greatly miss them. They are the personality luxury of your ascending career in the local universe.
See, so again, it's a small number. They sprinkle this, the creative mother spirit just sprinkles this little bit of delight, you know, throughout the ascension career. They're not essential. That's why they don't have to have large numbers. They say technically, you can go all the way without them. Right? You don't have to have a cherry on your Sunday to eat the Sunday. But it's cool if you happen to have a cherry on your Sunday. Right? And that's the point. It's a simple analogy of what they're pointing out. They're just that extra little bit that brings the light to the experience. But they aren't, mechanically essential to the process, to the physics of it. And you're going, well, that would the universe, would the creators give you something like that, just for the plain sake of the delight of it? No. The previous two paragraphs told you not. Right? See, the previous two paragraphs, yes. See, these three paragraphs go together here, notice. The previous two paragraphs are pointing out that it seems like they're all just for the delight of the present. They aren't there just for that. They're somehow indispensable in ways that you won't understand until you're a finaliter to this whole bit of getting everything up to supremacy. Remember, the only way that we can get up to supremacy, if there's things that are built there to begin with, the antecedent following, right? They're essential to this. They're partly built at the end from the beginning. And so only through them can we all get to the end. That's fundamentally why they exist. It's just that coincidentally, besides that physics reason that they exist, in the meantime, they sprinkle delight throughout your ascension career. Okay? So that they want you to put those three paragraphs together and see that picture. The delight you'll experience with them right now that seems to just be a passing experience a passing fancy somehow will come back around in the end and be found to not be a coincidence, right? It'll somehow find relevance, not just passing delight, but essential relevance somehow in you being able to become an absentite being in the end. That's the other thing that's in play there. So the lesson there is don't underestimate the significance of something that seems to be completely insignificant, or just for the immediate usefulness of the moment. Right? In supremacy, there are no coincidences. And so the particular passing details of a material moment will come back around. You won't have memories of them in the next life, right? But they're part of supremacy, and trillions of years from now you'll look back on those things that were part of your life here that seemed to be just here today and gone tomorrow. They'll somehow feed back into the picture in the end and be very relevant. So again, see, trust all of this to the Supreme. So trust it to the whole. Just be a happy tadpole, today and trust all these details. Don't worry, it's like, well, I'm gonna remember that or whatnot. Just trust that it all is as it should be. The things that you don't remember immediately are not supposed to be remembered immediately because they're not for the next life. They're for a trillion years from now.
And then they say, right. You can't forget, you will forget in eternity.
Right, all these things, right, yeah. So just it all works together is the way it should. So, all right. So we will get to the reversion directors in next time, and everyone loves that section. All right, let's take a moment here, everyone.